Famous for their iconic Humboldt fog, inspired by the misty Humboldt County coastline, Cypress Grove has been a cornerstone of American cheese for over 40 years. Their range of fresh, soft-ripened, and aged goat cheeses promises an unforgettable experience. Proudly crafted in Arcata, California, where the redwoods meet the Pacific Ocean, Cypress Grove cheeses are available nationwide at specialty retailers. Discover their cheeses, serving tips, and even order online at cypressgrovecheese.com. Perfect for any occasion or as a gift. There's nothing like that Humboldt fog feeling.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today
FM. It's time for the Culture Club, and we're delighted to be joined today by Peter Devlin from the Devlins, who are back. And he'll tell us about it in a moment. Let's just hear a little bit, though, of the first single from the forthcoming album, All the Days. The Days by the Devlins. Peter Devlin, you're very welcome.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
What is it, a decade since your last album?
Yeah, it is. And probably about 5 years since we played. Well, actually, we did a couple of gigs recently. We just played the All Together Now festival, which was great to be back. But yeah, it's taken a while.
We all
kind of worked on different projects. And as you know, self-employed independent musicians, when you get a job, whether it's working on a soundtrack or a TV show or a touring gig, you take it. And if it's a 2 or 3 month commitment, you go with it. And that's what we were all doing until we got to the stage where nobody was working on a project. We're all in the same city at the same time with some time to get into the studio and start recording.
Okay. And when will the album be available?
So the album's out on the 4th of October. And we're doing some shows in the States before the release of that. And then we're back here for a Dublin show on the 24th of October.
Okay. And then what sort of music, how would you describe it? Is it a typical album from the Devlins or is it something different?
It's a little bit more kind of electric guitar based than acoustic this time. Our producer Rob Kerwin said it took us about 30 years to make our shoegaze album, you know, where it's kind of like more electrics and fuzzy guitars and some keyboards as well. So it's a slightly different sound, but I think it's probably it's the proudest we are of an album. We made it with a label in LA who just gave us free reign and said, we'll just make the album you want to make. So there's no pressure. And we were, you know, recording it, making this for ourselves and having a lot of fun doing it.
Because how long is it now since your first album?
So mid-90s, I think. So 30 years.
Drift.
Since Drift, yeah.
That was about 1993, 31 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk about your musical influences to start the Culture Club, because I really love the choices you've given. We definitely are of a similar age, I think, given the type of music that you're into. And the first single you ever remember buying, I have a real memory of this as well. This goes back to 1978.
Yes, Ian Dury and the Blockheads, Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick, was the first single I bought. My first job was helping a neighbour who delivered bread to all the shops in the town. This was in Newry, where I grew up. And at the end of the day, I'd get a cream bun and £1. And with that, I bought my single, and that was Ian Dury. And I've been a fan of his ever since. I think he's a genius. And the band particularly are great. And the players on this, Norman Watroy, the bass player, Chas Jankel, who co-wrote the song, played guitar. They're all amazing players. This was recorded live. You know, they did maybe half a dozen takes and picked one. And when you listen back to it, it still sounds amazing. And I got to meet Chaz Schenkel when the Blockheads played the last time here, and had a pint with him, and just a lovely guy and incredibly talented.
Let's hear Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick.
Deserts of Sudan and the gardens of Japan, from Milan to Yucatan, every woman's, every man. Hit me with your rhythm stick, hit me, hit me, je t'adore, ich liebe dich. Hit me, hit me, hit me, hit me with your rhythm stick. Hit me slowly, hit me quick, hit me, hit me, hit me. In the wilds of Borneo and the vineyards of Bordeaux, Eskimo, Arapaho.
Peter Devon, that might be the best first track that anyone in the Culture Club has picked. That was a great way to start.
Yeah, thanks. I'm delighted. It's just, even listening to it now, I'm like the bass playing, like he's playing these 16ths. The saxophone player, Davy Payne, plays two saxophones in that solo, which is a real gimmick. And but it just sounds so good. And the lyrics, you know, simple, really memorable, and effective.
Your favourite album would also be on my list of favourite albums. You've gone for Talk Talk, The Colour of Spring. Tell us about this for those who are not familiar with Talk Talk.
So Talk Talk started as a synth pop band, and probably, you know, they were part of the new romantic wave. Some people held on to the eyeliner and the frilly shirts a bit too long, and kind of their careers were never really recovered. But they managed to manoeuvre out of that and become, you know, one of the most respected creative bands that I think that from that era, Depeche Mode, probably another band that managed to do that successfully. But this album, Colour of Spring, is kind of the bridge between the synth pop, very commercial sound that they had, and then their latter albums, well, especially the last one, which is called Laughingstock, which is probably the most uncommercial album ever released by a former pop band. But this is just beautiful because I think it's really down to the producer, Tim Freeze-Green, who influences the very acoustic sound, almost improv jazz sound of it.
Here is a little bit of one of the standout tracks from The Colour of Spring. This is Life's What You Make It. Talk Talk, Life's What You Make It, and Living in Another World is another great track from that album. They've come up in a lot of times recently, been sampled by other groups as well, haven't they? People, that modern generation of music has gone back to a lot of Talk Talk music.
Yeah, just because I think of that sound, which, you know, now still sounds so fresh, you know, listening to that. They're so well respected that, you know, you'll hear producers, musicians name check them. Which is great.
Although Mark Hollis died, I think, just over 5 years ago now at this stage.
Yeah, very sad. I mean, he was a genius.
And he was only 64 when he died. Yeah, so anyway, that's Talk Talk. Great choice for a favourite album. Favourite band or artist? Who have you gone for?
The Blue Nile.
Okay, Paul Buchanan.
Paul, yeah, and Robert and PJ. Favorite musically, but also personally. You know, I'm lucky enough to know them and have worked with them over the years. I'd always been a fan, and they were really helpful to us when we were getting our first negotiating our first record deal and publishing deal. And we met in New York, and I'd been a fan, and then ended up working with them. But I just listened to the music all the time, and especially Paul's solo stuff as well. Midair was a beautiful solo album that he put out in 2012. It was on the soundtrack of that film, About Time, a beautiful song. But again, real simplicity in lyrics, but with such emotion, and simplicity in production. And the one thing that we learned from the Blue Nile was the space in their music. You know,
what do you mean by that?
The notes that you don't play are as important as the ones that you do. So restraint and holding back. So
minimalist
space is the place. Yeah.
Okay. Cause the album that I really still go back to is Walk Across the Rooftops.
Yeah,
and the other one, Hats. And here's a track from Hats, The Downtown Lights.
Sometimes I walk away when all I really want to do is love.
By the Blue Nile. Beautiful stuff. You clearly like your synthesizers in music, do you?
Well, I'm just realizing that now there are a lot of synthesizers, but you know, I do love acoustic music and electric guitar music as well, but that's just timeless, you know, that sound. That's the song that Taylor Swift name checked that on her last album, the Tortured Poets album, and as a result, you know, the streams just went through the roof. So delighted to see a whole new generation of people discovering the Blue Nile.
Now, you've played many gigs in your 30-year-plus career, but you've been at many as well. So what are the standout ones for you?
Really difficult to pick one. It was between David Byrne at the Three Arena.
Is that recent one, a few years ago?
Yeah, well, 2018, I think it was.
Yeah, but everyone who was at it said it was just utterly spectacular.
It was. It was just groundbreaking. It was kind of. It was theatre as well as music and choreography. Everybody was wearing, the band were wearing grey suits. I think it was a 12-piece band, but they were moving around the stage. All coordinated, synchronized, beautifully choreographed. There were no cables, so they were all playing their instruments without having any cables. It was all, you know, radio frequencies. A very simple silver backdrop. And it was incredible that the sound that they were making, to be able to make the sound and move and entertain in a way that we'd never seen before. So that would have been my probably second choice, but first.
Was he going back to the Stop Making Sense era, that sort of music?
And yes. Then,
because he's produced so much music over the years.
Yeah. I mean, one of my favourite albums is the Ray Momo album that he did. I drove down to Thurles, he played the Fela, and I just drove to see that set and then drove back. It was amazing. I'm a big fan of his, but yeah, it was kind of the Stop Making Sense, that kind of, that era. And the musicianship was incredible, but he's just he's such an innovator, you know, in so many ways. And that show was outstanding.
But you have one other one for that might have even been better.
Yeah, it was the first gig that I was at, and that was the Specials in the Stardust.
This is something I think that only a lot of people have realised recently in talking about the Stardust disaster and the disco that was there. But it was actually a concert venue as well.
Yeah.
And lots of great gigs took place there. I remember talking to Liam Cunningham, who was from the area, about this, him seeing Thin Lizzy and the others like that. I think U2 played there and everything.
Yeah, and it was a place where a lot of punk bands played that wouldn't have been allowed into, you know, beautiful theatres like the Olympia or the Gaiety or whatever. It was a real rock venue. And so this was a month before they started fire. Yeah. And I was 13 at the time. A lot of my friends had all said, yeah, we'll all go, we'll all get tickets. And we went into town. I was the only one that bought the ticket. I was the only one who was allowed to go by their parents. And it was the most exciting, terrifying, exhilarating, inspirational concert I've ever been at. There were fights breaking out, there were stage invasions, the concert was stopped two or three times because the microphones were being stolen, and Terry Hall was asking the audience, we can't play until we get our microphones back. And then and there was no security, there were no barriers, there were people just jumping up on the stage. And then towards the end, they toppled the whole PA system, the stack of speakers at the front, and that was the end of the show.
That was the Specials at the Stardust.
Yeah.
And you loved it.
I loved it. I wanted to do that.
What age were you at that stage?
I was 13. Yeah.
And your parents let you.
Yeah, and they let me, yeah. They knew how much it meant to me to go and see them.
And you were collected afterwards. What did you tell them about it?
Well, my ears were ringing. I could hardly hear, but I told them the whole story. And, they said, okay, well, next time you got to go bring a friend, you know.
Oh, you went on your own, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I went on my own, yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant. Yeah. Okay, Peter Devlin is with us for the Culture Club this evening. Let's move on to other things. And when we asked for a favourite movie or an actor or director, you nominated Donnie Darko. Tell us about this movie, which I think is from the late 1980s, early 1990s.
It's set in the 80s, but it came out about, was it 2000?
Or was it that late?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And so it's set in 80s in kind of small town Virginia, not the one in County Cavan, in the States. And it's about this teenage boy, Donnie Darko, and he's quite troubled, and one of the issues that he has is sleepwalking. And the opening scene is where he wakes up at the top of a mountain beside his bike, and the sun is rising and he doesn't know how he got there, and he gets on his bike and he cycles down this mountain road, and Echo and the Bunnymen, Killing Moon plays. And from that moment, I'm hooked. I'm in. I'm invested in this. The soundtrack is phenomenal. But it's a mix of, it's a thriller, it's a drama, it's a horror, it's sci-fi, there's a love story as well. It's got a bit of everything. It's quite complex. When I first saw it, I didn't know exactly what was going on, but I knew I wanted to watch it again.
Okay. Favourite play or musical or theatre show? What have you gone for?
I'm a fan of Enda Walsh.
Oh, he was here doing the Culture Club only about 2 months ago.
No way.
He was here with us, yeah.
Okay. I loved the Walworth farce, but I think my favourite of his would be Ballyturk. Which I saw in the Olympia.
Which was with Michael Murphy and Cillian Murphy.
Yes, that's right.
And it was terrific.
It was amazing.
Incredible energy the two of them had. They just bounced around the stage for the whole time.
Yeah, and the one, Grief is a Thing with Feathers, is that was the solo Cillian Murphy one, which again, the energy there, it's like so physical. But this one was, apart from that, it's just, again, it's one of those plays. When we left the Olympia, we went for a pint and we were... Everybody was thinking about it, and there was silence, and then there were questions, and it was one of those plays that really challenges you, and we discussed it after, and everybody had a different take on what it was about the existential crisis, the big questions, is there a heaven, is there God, it was challenging, which I suppose good theatre should be.
As well as entertaining.
And entertaining, yes.
Let's have a clip from it. This is not the version that was on at the Olympia. This is the one we were able to get. Performed by the University of Reading, directed by Josh Oliver. This is just a short clip from Ballyturk.
There was nothing to begin with. And out of that, you and me pushed words. 27 words I used first. And in the woods, birds call all manner of noises and drown out the stream that runs through the trees. Slowly the stream moved through the town as Ballyturk wakes. And flat terraced houses stand by flat terraced shops. drawn with tarmac and weathered by time and rain. All the people of Ballyturk sit on their beds, moaning light and radio sounds, placing them up and pushing doors, and standing out on Moyne Street enclosed stuck with damp and punchy air.
Ballyturk, written by Enda Walsh. Okay, books. Let's talk a little bit about your books. You're a big fan of somebody else who has done the Culture Club, John Boyne.
Yes, I do. I like John Boyne, The Heart's Invisible Furies, and then I just read Water and Earth as well. Claire Keegan was in there, Callot Hosseini, The Kite Runner. But the one that I really love is the Cormac McCarthy book, The Road. I've gone with that as a favourite. I loved All the Pretty Horses, which I think was before the American trilogy, before that. And this came out, The Road came out in 2006 when I became a dad for the second time. And although this is, you know, a dystopian tale of, you know, a father and son crossing America as the world is about to end, for me, it's about the relationship and family and protecting the son. I think the inspiration, he said once in an interview, was when he was traveling with his son, who was about 10 at the time, staying in a hotel, and the son was sleeping on the bed, and he looked out the window and was imagining the world in the future, what it would look like for his son, and you know, how could he protect him. And I suppose now it's more relevant and poignant than it was back then, when you look at what's going on and turn on the TV or look online. So it was just really powerful. And the imagery was incredible.
We have an extract from the audiobook of Cormac McCarthy's The Road.
Everything paling away into the murk, the soft ash blowing in loose swirls over the blacktop. He studied what he could see. The segments of road among the dead trees, looking for anything of color, any movement, any trace of standing smoke. He lowered the glasses and pulled down the cotton mask from his face and wiped his nose on the back of his wrist and then glassed the country again. Then he just sat there holding the binoculars and watching the ashen daylight congeal over the land. He knew only that the child was his warrant. He said, "If he's not the word of God, God never spoke." When he got back, the boy was still asleep. He pulled the blue plastic tarp off of him and folded it and carried it out to the grocery cart and packed it and came back with their plates and some cornmeal cakes and a plastic bag and a plastic bottle of syrup. He spread the small tarp they used for a table on the ground and laid everything out, and he took the pistol from his belt and laid it on the cloth. And then he just sat watching the boy sleep. He pulled away his mask in the night and it was buried somewhere in the blankets. He watched the boy, and he looked out through the trees toward the road. This wasn't a safe place.
Cormac McCarthy's book, The Road. Now, totally different is your favourite TV show as a child, one that you also watched subsequently with your daughters as children.
Yeah, yeah. Now for something completely different.
Yeah.
Little House on the Prairie was a series that I grew up on, and my entire family watched that religiously every week. And when we moved to France and we were living there for a year with the girls when they were very young, and I ordered the entire box set, which I think is about 20 different seasons and with 20 different episodes, and we watched the whole thing from start to finish, and they loved it, just because in every show there are wonderful life lessons and great characters, and they enjoyed it.
Did you enjoy it from rewatching it?
I enjoyed it watching it again with them, you know, 30, 40 years later, whatever it was.
You didn't find it twee?
No, not at all. I just, I think I was watching it through their eyes as well. And they, you know, the Nellie Olsen character and the Charles Ingalls character, all, you know, the bullies and the good and evil and just
and growing
characters.
Up, I suppose, in poverty as well, and trying to make their way and make a better life for themselves.
Yes, and they didn't need very much, you know, to be happy. So I think it's a great show for kids of all ages, and you know, there aren't very many being made like that now.
Okay, and then for a more recent one, you haven't, not from the immediate time, you've gone back a couple of decades, but there's a good reason why you've gone back for 6 Feet Under.
Yes, well, we first heard of 6 Feet Under when Alan Ball, who was the writer and director, and he wrote American Beauty as well, he contacted us and said, I'm I've got this new show, it's called 6 Feet Under, I'm developing for HBO, and I'd love to use one of your songs in the very first episode to close it. And it just, the music and vocals with no dialogue from the actors. And he sent us the script, and we agreed immediately because we were big fans of American Beauty. And then that in turn led to us being on a lot of HBO shows like Sopranos and Rescue Me and all of those after that.
That must be incredible for a musical career. That gives you an enormous amount of an additional outlet for following, does it?
Yeah, well, Matt, we never really had a big hit single, you know, and we never got beyond the Vicar Streets and Olympias here or in North America. So what paid our mortgage and, you know, paid the bills and kept us on the road were the soundtracks and, you know, the royalties and the publishing.
Well, let's hear that track that was used on the very first episode of 6 Feet Under. And here's a little bit of Waiting.
The station, waiting for the right moves, waiting in the basement, waiting for the right cues, waiting in a daydream. Waiting in the slipstream, waiting, waiting in the right bars, waiting in the right shoes.
How cool is that when you get your music used? Because you mentioned The Sopranos, possibly the greatest TV show ever made, and movies like Closer and Batman Forever.
Yes, it's a great feeling when somebody, especially, you know, a creative like Alan Ball, you know, a great writer like that, hears a song and says, okay, this is something that's going to work with, you know, with my ideas, with my script. So it's a real compliment. And we've been very lucky with that.
Well, let's hear also a little bit from 6 Feet Under. This is a scene in which David, played by Michael C. Hall, comes out to his mother, played by Frances Conroy.
I have a terrible headache.
Well, maybe we can talk later.
What? What?
I'm gay.
Why didn't you ever tell me?
I am telling you.
Before. Don't you trust me?
What do you mean? I'm telling you.
But I've tried to discuss it with you several times.
Look, I just wasn't comfortable, okay? What does it matter now?
Why not? When I was clearly trying to be open.
You know, Mom, you may be trying to be open now. And that's great. And you know, when you've tried to bring it up before, or now even, it's like you've decided you should know who I am, like you're willing to see me the way you make yourself look at something horrible, like a corpse, because it's your job, your duty. It revolts you, but you make yourself bear it.
You're wrong. You don't revolt me. I don't choose which part of you I love, like some kind of chicken. It was just so much easier when you were little and you would tell me everything.
Well, that's all that I wanted to say.
All right. We're having veal.
6 Feet Under, a family of undertakers. And it is a story which I think has held up very well, isn't it?
Yes, and it's a really fascinating concept. I mean, the characters are amazing, the writing is great, but the setting is brilliant when you think about this family business of undertakers, where the family, the house is literally, you know, this is the funeral home, is their home, and in the basement is the morgue and where the embalming takes place. So it's sort of a look behind the curtain at the lives of those people that we, I suppose, entrusted to take care of that, you know, most traumatic time in our lives. And you know, around that then are the, you know, the complex family issues and the traumas and but it's there's a lot of dark humor as well, where they talk to the corpse at the start of every episode. You know, it is brilliant.
To finish, buried treasure, which we ask everyone, something that you believe people should know more about, and you have gone for a new album by
Colin McConamore.
You're the second person to nominate him as a buried treasure over the years on
really?
The Culture Club, but not this album. Tell us about the new album. Tell us about him for those who may not have heard before.
So he is a founding member of The Frames. Most people will know him from The Frames. He plays violin, but from a very traditional background. And this is his third solo album. It's called The River Holds Its Breath. And it's just one of those albums where it's perfect for, you know, a Sunday morning on a road trip, or sitting by the fire on a winter's night with a book and a glass of red wine, or walking with headphones on. It just, wherever you are, whenever you listen to it, it just lifts your mood. It's so perfect and so brilliant. And he's one of the most talented musicians, I think, that we're lucky to have.
This is Golden Hour from The River Holds Its Breath. Irma from the new album The River Holds Its Breath, and that is Golden Hour. And we've had a wonderful time discussing music and other cultural influences with Peter Devlin from The Devlins. Peter, thank you so much for having taken the time.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper, weekdays from 4:30. Today.